Let's do it.
Out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
And welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Got a great show for you guys tonight. Once again, have the whole crew. Well, maybe the whole crew. We'll see how it goes with Miles tonight. But we'll start things off. Let's get Miles out the way just to be safe. Miles, what's going on with you, man?
I don't know. I got booted upstairs. My wife's watching her show. So, yeah, I'm here for now.
Miles is kind of here with us tonight, you know, and to get back to the regular order of things. QB1, what's going on, my man?
You know, victory Monday, actually Tuesday now, so everything is good.
It's Tuesday already?
Yep.
Yeah. Still, you know, I guess by the time this drops, it'll be Tuesday. Saxy, what's going on?
Jerry, fresh off overseas or something?
My man. How y'all doing? It's been a good day. It's been a good day, like much like JR said. Enjoying this victory as well as some of the drama that comes along with it. But, you know, we good.
Yo, yeah, like, I spent my Saturday with Prince. So I know what his apartment looks like. I know where he's wandering around to.
Okay.
Yeah, man. It's crazy.
How was the game?
That are around. Yeah.
No, it was good. Miles met up a couple hours before the game and whatnot. Got some McDonald's for some breakfast.
Yinka was literally in the middle about to make breakfast for both of us in the pans, and he's like, hey, let's go get McDonald's.
Well, I was because just before Miles got there, I had to do some errands for my Kumle, and then I was like, you know, I might as well just make his breakfast. But then I had to take a shower.
15 minutes late.
Prince was gonna make breakfast and open the fridge. He was like, let's go to McDonald's.
Yeah.
No, I had some stuff in the I looked at the clock and I was just like, you know, by the time I get done, it'll probably be, you know, I also want to take a shower. So, you know, we got to the game on time. It was a good game, blowout game against Nebraska. We needed it.
Before I ask JR how much he's judging Prince right now, I want to know what Prince was gonna cook.
Oh man, I had
apparently eggs take a while, so.
No, like I had some eggs, I had some sausage, I had some bacon, you know, I had some waffles.
The real question is links or patties sausage.
Oh.
Okay.
I know the answer. JR, like I know the answer, but does Prince know the answer?
Okay,
I'm taking too long. This is a simple question.
Let me show you what's in my freezer right now. So what's in my freezer? So
that
y'all
means
can
it's
see
linked.
No, it is patties. Y'all can see it. It is patties.
I can't confirm it is patties.
It is definitely patties. Okay.
We're safe.
It's patties. Yeah.
All right. Let's stop. We'll stop giving Prince such a hard time because, as he alluded to, I mean, obviously, Vikings won, and you would have thought that would have been the start of a wonderful day, some celebration on Vikings Twitter. And instead, Vikings Twitter caught on fire. Case versus Teddy became a thing. People actually staked out like actual positions in this whole Case Keenum versus Teddy Bridgewater and people splintering. Somehow we got pulled into all this, even though as far as I can tell from going back through my timeline and all of your timelines, none of you had anything to say really about any of this stuff. Saxy Prince said all he wanted to say a couple pods ago. JR's, your position is well known. Miles and I have kind of stayed out of the fray, even though most, I think, know that we think that, you know, over the long term, Teddy Bridgewater is likely a better option for the Vikings than Case Keenum. Yeah, but we got roped into a bunch of stuff here where folks made it out to be that our official position was one that we either don't like Case Keenum or we want the team to lose or a bunch of other stuff that's on there. So, none of those things are true. Also, this straw man position that has been kind of set up that Without naming names, because names, no one ever names names, but that our position is that Teddy Bridgewater was Tom Brady before he got injured, which is also a ridiculous position. I mean, I think that the thing that most people have said is that Teddy Bridgewater, anyone who watched, played two seasons in a system that wasn't designed necessarily for his skill set. He was a young player. He had a great college profile. People who were deep into the film loved him coming out of college. People who were deep into analytics loved him coming out of college. And people were excited to see how he would perform in an offense suited to him versus an offense suited to the previous face of the franchise, Adrian Peterson. And that's really as far as it's gone. It's Teddy Bridgewater. I'm on record on many occasions saying Teddy Bridgewater to date in the NFL has been about an average quarterback. The same way that I was on record saying that Sam Bradford, before coming to Minnesota, was an average quarterback. Case Keenum, I think most would have said before the season started, Case Keenum was an average or slightly below average NFL quarterback, probably wasn't a starting quarterback, and was likely what we would all consider to be a high-end backup quarterback. So obviously some games have been played. Case Keenum has gone out and performed well. But for me, I mean, I think if at the beginning of the season you saw Teddy Bridgewater as a starting NFL quarterback and you saw Case Keenum as a backup NFL quarterback, 7 games isn't a big enough sample for that to change, in my opinion. And so that's where I'm at with it. But really where I'm at with all of it is that I'm kind of sick of talking about it, right? Like, we're in the season. The Vikings are doing amazing. And for whatever reason, we keep finding things to be unhappy about on Vikings Twitter, which just seems silly. Like, none of it is that serious. It's just Twitter. Like, these aren't your real friends. It shouldn't get you this upset. But Miles raised a good point. You know, I know that, you know, because this is a quote Team Teddy podcast, there could be some bias that's seeping in. So Miles brought up the point that maybe you know, that bias that is seeping in a little bit is causing some nitpicking of Case's performance. So, Miles, I wanted to flip it over to you, and hopefully your internet will hold up, because you did have some good takes on this part of it here. And I wanted to get your perspective on this whole Case, Teddy, you know, is Team Teddy nitpicking, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I think, you know, it's really hard to not give a guy like Case Keenum all the credit in the world for what he's come in and done. You know, coming into the offseason, I know a lot of people were like, Case Keenum's the backup quarterback. Like, is he even going to be able to beat up Taylor Heineke? And at this point, you know, look at the stage now. I mean, the fact that we even had to question that is really funny to me, because Taylor Heineke's, you know, trying out for the Chicago Bears right now to even potentially be on their practice squad. Well, Case Keenum's leading a 7-2 Minnesota Vikings team. So that kind of shows you, you know, how we thought of all that, you know, during the offseason. But then you fast forward it now, and I mean, yeah, has Case had his struggles? Of course he has. I think, you know, there's a few games here and there where it really hasn't been, you know, put on his shoulders to win the game, which is okay. I mean, a lot of people like to compare and contrast the, you know, Teddy's 2015 season to Case or Sam Bradford right now, you know, when Sam Bradford was healthy. But you know, people love to compare the stats and all that stuff. And, you know, Case is kind of getting a lot of that 2015 Teddy, where some of the games he's not really being asked to win the game. He's just being told, don't lose us the game. Well, you know, we let our playmakers, our run game and our defense win us this game. And that's kind of how it's been. That's kind of been the formula. I mean, there's been a couple games, obviously, where, you know, Case has kind of had to play at a really good, you know, really high level to, you know, help this team win. You know, there's Tampa, which I'm still not sure that, you know, he had to play that way for us to win the game. But, I mean, either way, he played a really good game, that one. And then there's a game yesterday against Washington where, you know, the first half, I mean, dare I say, it was better than Sam Bradford's, you know, New Orleans Saints, you know, part of that New Orleans Saints game. I mean, I'm not even going to. But, you know, there's kind of that argument there. You know, that's how well Case was playing yesterday against a pretty solid secondary in Washington. I mean, they had the two interceptions later in the game. But, I mean, besides the few mistakes, which they could have been pretty costly and they didn't come at the best of times, which, I mean, Case even himself said on an interview I heard on K-Fan today,
he even said, you know, those, you know, the situation that those interceptions came, the timing and all that, you know, they weren't good. You know, there's a, not saying there's a time and place for turnovers, but in that situation, you know, the couple situations where Case gave the ball away, those were, you know, pretty bad situations and times where you, you know, you didn't want to turn the ball over, you know, you'd rather punt the ball or, you know, do something like that. But overall, I'm kind of getting off track, but getting back on track to like the Teddy Case debate, Case Keenum's doing a really good job right now. I mean, it's, I understand the, you know, the unknown with Teddy and the potential ceiling with Teddy in this offense. I do think the team's going to make the decision at some point to move toward Teddy, whether it's this week, a couple weeks, whenever. But I do think as a as a Ted head, which I think is terrible, I'm not even, I just kind of mocking those stupid names that people love to give us. But we want Teddy Bridgewater to be the quarterback, and we want him to come back from that horrific knee injury and to play at a level that, you know, we know that we think he can play at, which, you know, before the injury we thought was pretty high. So we're kind of seeing that in our heads that, like, Teddy can get to that level, you know, whether it's a week or two down the road, once he gets that opportunity to start. So, you know, we kind of get that in our mind that that's what he's going to do and that's going to happen. So let's give him that opportunity now. And I'm kind of been on board with saying that too, but at the same time, Case is playing at a level that, like, you can't get mad at him for. You can't, it's a really hard decision for the Vikings to just be like, hey, Teddy, it's your turn. Welcome back. It's your team again. When Case is playing as well as he has. And I do think there are some nitpicking going on where, you know, people nitpick a throw here, a throw there, just because they do want to see Teddy, and I get it. Because I do think Teddy does provide the higher ceiling and the higher upside down the road. But I do understand the – it is tough to go and just make the decision to just jump Teddy in right now and tell Case, hey, man, good job, handshake. You know, we'll let you know if we need you again later this season or not. But, you know, put your ball cap on and we're going to hand the reins over to Teddy because, you know, Case is making a pretty good argument for, you know, a contract extension, you know, whether it is to be not even, I wouldn't even call it the QB of the future. And, you know, Jason, I know you had your post earlier today. I'd probably call it more of like a QB of the next year or two while the team decides what their decision is for, you know, the long-term effect of the QB, you know, whether that be a high draft pick, whether that still be letting, you know, him and Teddy Bridgewater battle it out next year if they find a way to be able to, you know, re-sign both. But overall, I just think, you know, Case isn't playing at a bad level. Like, well, the way this team is winning games has a lot of the 2015 version to it, but we have better playmakers and we have better skill sets around the quarterback this time around to be able to make this a more effective run at something special, you know, whether it is like an NFC championship, you know, at least getting to the division around and, you know, obviously hopefully the Super Bowl, but it's there and Case is capable of potentially at least getting us, you know, deep into the playoffs, depending on obviously how the regular season plays out and how the seeding goes. But, you know, Case is at that point where he's playing well enough to where we could win 11 or 12 games this year. No problem. I really believe that. It's going to be a tough stretch going down the road right here. You know, the next, I think, 3 or 4 or 5 games. But, yeah. I just have a hard time getting away from Case at this point, too. Like, I can understand the argument for both sides because whatever Zim decides, it's like I'm not going to get mad at him because, to me, it's a win-win situation right now. I mean, you go with Teddy and you see what Teddy has, and that's the potential long-term solution at quarterback as well as like your higher ceiling opportunity this year. And then you have Case who's playing at a really good level right now and you can stay that steady, you know, that steady path. So I can understand both sides.
Yeah. And I, and you alluded to the poll that I posted on Twitter because I was interested to get a bit of insight into that because obviously, I mean, there's folks that are out there saying, you know, ride the hot hand, keep it going with Case. But then I found it, I guess also interesting that, you know, the results came back as lopsided as they did in that poll. So we had, I think, 1,001 people respond. And I mean, it was pretty resounding in favor of, 88 saying no, Case Keenum shouldn't be the quarterback of the future. 12% saying yes, Case Keenum should be signed as the quarterback of the future. And so I guess, and you know, I'll open it up to the other guys here. If you at this point don't trust Case Keenum to be your quarterback of the future, do we trust him to be our quarterback in the playoffs? And if we don't trust him to be our quarterback in the playoffs, then don't we need to get Teddy Bridgewater on the field sooner rather than later? I guess that's where I'm kind of coming at it with now is it seems as though the team had a plan, and that plan was likely that Teddy Bridgewater was going to start at home week 11. But it also seems the fan base, even though people are saying, you know, stick with the hot hand, the fan base still doesn't trust Case Keenum long term. So if you don't trust him long term, do you really want him playing in the biggest games of this season? Because if he does do well in those games this season, then you sign him to the long term then. So, JR, I guess I'll kick it to you for your comment on that, I guess. I'm guessing I know where you voted in terms of Case Keenum as the Vikings quarterback of the future. But I guess, you know, this has become a more difficult decision, or at least it seems that it's become a more difficult decision based on how Case Keenum played in that Washington game, especially in the first half. Yeah, I guess where are you leaning with things and where do you think the team ends up going with everything?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a tough decision. And I mean, I think the Vikings have to play for the present right now. And I think that's playing Case Keenum just simply because, you know, I think he has the hot hand, so to speak, if that's what you want to call it right now. But he also has the chemistry with the receivers. And we know what Case Keenum is at this point. I mean, he's a glorified backup quarterback, like I always like to call him. But, you know, he's excelled in Shermer's scheme. And maybe we were being unfair to Case Keenum when we signed him. And maybe he just wasn't in a great situation in his previous stops. And, you know, with the then St. Louis Rams and then, you know, down with the Texans. So maybe him being with Shermer is finally showing his skill set. We all know he's not the quarterback of the future, but maybe he is the quarterback of the present right now, and that is the 2017 season. And, I mean, everyone's saying Case Keenum can't go deep into the playoffs, but we really don't know that. And, I mean, he's proven to be a middle-of-the-road quarterback this season, and he's given the Vikings average quarterback play to this point. Yes, the mistakes that he makes, you know, especially the ones yesterday where he threw the two interceptions yesterday will come back to hurt the Vikings, you know, maybe in the playoffs against teams like the Eagles or the Saints. But, I mean, we really don't know. It's a tough decision. Everyone knows I'm a huge Teddy Bridgewater fan, but, you know, I think Case has earned the start the next game simply because, I mean, the team is winning right now. Yes, we've talked about Case's deficiencies, but Teddy Bridgewater is a huge unknown right now. But, I mean, I don't think you can go wrong with it either way just because – and, you know, I've said this repeatedly. I think Case Keenum is like a relief pitcher. If things are going good, you can put him in. If things are going bad, you can put him in. So let's say if it's a similar situation to where Bradford was in Chicago, where things were going bad, you can insert Case Keenum right back to, you know, how he was playing just because that's what he's used to. He's a career journeyman, and that's what he's used to at this point. So I don't think you can go wrong with either one of those guys, in my opinion. But I think Case Keenum has earned the right to start against the Rams this weekend.
Well, and I think, too, real quick, I think what a nice part of this whole situation, you call it nice, whatever you want, but between the two guys, Case and Teddy, no matter what the decision's made, you're not going to hear, you know, either one of those guys, you know, talk negatively about the other guy. You're not going to hear neither one of them are going to create a controversy in the locker room. You know what I mean? Like, neither one of them really has those type of personalities to, like, try to divide and make things worse for the team. They just want what's best for the team, even though they might not be happy about the solution or what, you know, what the decision is. They're not gonna create a distraction. So that's what I like about this whole situation, though.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. And just the way that everything's been handled, like, you know, after the game, that clip was going around of Teddy getting emotional on the sidelines, and you could see the whole team rallied around him, and Case Keenum even got in on the act saying how much of an inspiration Teddy Bridgewater even was to him. So, like, it doesn't really seem to be something that is really and truly a division in the locker room. I think, if anything, just based on how Case Keenum has played, if anything, the team looks at it as they have multiple guys who can go out there and get the job done if necessary, which, I mean, that seems like a good problem to have. And, Yinka, you know, we'll get you on here. You know, it's I think this might be the longest stretch we've gone in Climbing the Pocket history without Yinka having something to say. So we need to get him back in here before he starts walking around on us or something. But there was a Twitter question that came in, and it said, you know, if Teddy Bridgewater put up numbers like Case Keenum put up in the game versus Washington, would you be looking for Teddy Bridgewater to be benched for somebody else? So it's one of those kind of roundabouts. Obviously, the answer is no, but there's a subtext there that, you know, Case Keenum played all right. Why are people looking to get him out of there? So I figured I'd give you an opportunity to hop in on that one since, I mean, you did go on a bit of a rant there talking about why you felt like maybe Case Keenum should go and sit down somewhere.
Yeah, I guess mostly, you know, you guys already know how I felt about that. And, you know, up until the Washington game, Case Keenum, I think he did kind of resort back to the Case Keenum that I thought, you know, this is the reason why I feel like Teddy Bridgewater should be put in there. But, you know, I can't fault him, or I can't say anything really bad, because that those first 3.5 quarters, in my opinion, inside me, I was sitting on the couch, I was saying, like, hey, Case Keenum, he deserves to start next week. There's no questions about it. I think Miles brought in a lot of good points as far as, you know, I think there is a little bit of nitpicking that's happening there. But I mean, I think understandably it's why it's happening. I think it's why we also nitpicked at Sam Bradford, for instance. You know, those older veteran guys, the 28, 29, 30-year-old guys who, you know, their expectation is some of those mistakes that you see happening are a lot more excusable for a guy like Teddy Bridgewater, who was only 20, 23, 24 at the time. You know, some of the young, like Dak Prescott's, you know, some of the younger quarterbacks that are in the league. Whereas Case Keenum, you know, you kind of, the expectation is the reason why you brought him in as a veteran backup is, you know, he should kind of know what to do. So it was worrisome to see those kinds of mistakes, because if you are in the playoffs, like, that's going to be more than likely going to be a playoff loss when you're facing, you know, when you're facing some of these other better quarterbacks. But I guess to answer your question, am I looking to bench Teddy? I'm going to say no. And I think this is, I tried to kind of allude to it when we were talking, but I know how much pressure there is for.
He's back. We lost you for a second. You froze, so I was worried that that we were going to lose you, like the old days.
Sorry, no. I know that there's a lot of pressure, obviously, with you know, the Super Bowl being here and us wanting to win the Super Bowl, and you know, I'm definitely here for it. But to me personally speaking, like, I'm not trying to be short-sighted. I want to win the Super Bowl, but I don't just want to win this Super Bowl. I want to win this Super Bowl, the next one, and the next one, and that might not be Teddy Bridgewater. I'm more than comfortable saying that. But I think that is still such an important question the Vikings have to answer. You know, Case Keenum winning games is fantastic. And can he win us a couple playoff games? I do think that he can. With his high variance style play, he can do that. The problem is you know, once this year is done, you know, there's next year as well, too. You know, Harrison Smith's getting old, Everson Griffin's getting old, Linval Joseph, all those players who they – you know, have some stability at this position. And, you know, Case winning the Super Bowl would be great. And then it's like your poll, Jason. Do you trust this guy to be your quarterback for the future? A lot of people are saying no. I'm sure they're off. Not all, maybe some people in the front office who don't think it. But the Vikings did a great job with bringing in a high-end backup, which is something that we've talked about a lot. You know, you always want the quarterback position to be competitive and have enough players in the room that really can help win you football games. And the Vikings did a fantastic job, because last year, that wasn't the case. And, I mean, even the year before, it wasn't the case. So I just think that it's important to win the Super Bowl. That's number one for sure. But I think it's just as important to have some questions of your future answered as well, too.
I got just a couple questions for y'all. One, has Case? I know it's a 7-game sample size, but like, has Case started to earn that respect of he's no longer just a high end backup? He's probably better than. He's probably in the top 32, obviously, of quarterbacks in the league right now. I mean,
are you asking me if some team is going to pay him $12 million to be a starter?
I know your answer. That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking, like, we keep calling him a high end backup.
Yeah, can I hop in on this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, because and so this is where I think it gets a little bit tough, and this is why I think the evaluation does have so much passion on both sides. But this is also why I think that, you know, if you went into kind of your offseason program and saw how Teddy was progressing, and I think at the beginning of the season, you had a plan, and in that plan, you thought that Teddy Bridgewater was a superior quarterback to Case Keenum. That's the thing that I think has been lost in all of this, is that the Vikings situation right now is incredibly quarterback friendly. So you saw a Sam Bradford who played in horrible situations throughout his career come in here with the weapons the Vikings have, Pat Shurmur calling plays, has a career year, plays a game against the Saints, has the best game of his career. Case Keenum comes in, who is a career backup quarterback. Everyone knows what Case Keenum was in terms of what his tape is. He is a weak-armed, YOLO type of quarterback. And this isn't me like trying to dog Case Keenum. That's just what his scouting report is. Case Keenum isn't out there throwing the ball, you know, 70 yards downfield on a rope. He's just not that guy. He doesn't have prototypical size. But he comes into this situation that is a great situation, and it elevates him. And right now, there's no other way to look at it. Case Keenum is performing like probably a top 10, a borderline top 10 quarterback in the league, right? But my thing is if you're looking at a Case Keenum, who everyone who's looked at him coming out of college through his NFL career would look at and be like, that's a high-end backup quarterback. What's changed, I don't think, is Case Keenum. What's changed is Case Keenum's situation. So if you're asking if I would still think of Case Keenum in general as a high-end backup quarterback, absolutely the answer is yes, because Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs aren't going with Case Keenum to wherever he goes next.
Yeah.
Right? So I feel like whichever team expects him to perform like he's performing right now in a different situation without two arguably top eight wide receivers in the NFL for him to throw the ball to, I mean, that's I think that that team that, you know, Yinka out here hustling on behalf of Case Keenum, that team that Yinka is going to get to pay Case Keenum, you know, $13 million a year, is going to be sorely disappointed because they're not going to have the same level of weaponry around to support a Case Keenum.
But
for the Vikings, you know, it could work where he can continue to do what he's doing in our system. And it potentially could be the thing that works. My thing is, with this sample size being as small as it is, I just don't know that right now. I'm saying if at the start of all this you thought Teddy Bridgewater was better, then you probably should still think he's better because it's a 7-game sample. And that's not a lot. Nick Foles happened.
And that's kind of where this my whole Case $12 million stems from, because I do think Case, just like Bradford, and, you know, as we probably will see with Teddy, he's in a fantastic situation. This offensive line has been completely retooled. Like, it's fun to watch this offensive line because you're seeing Case Keenum have a lot more time in the pocket. Throwing to Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs, it's QB's, you know, dream to be able to have these kinds of things. Another team is going to see that and like, hey, I think that this guy could be our potential starter, bridge quarterback, or just our starter. And, you know, plenty of teams make that mistake. Take away from the fact that he is still playing, as Jason has said, you know, like a very, you know, near top 10, if not top 10 type quarterback. But that's where you have to, you kind of your meter your expectations as far as this guy, because you have to ask yourself, can this guy really be the kind of quarterback who's going to raise the talent level around him? Or was he the kind of quarterback who was a beneficiary of that talent? So
I guess that's why I asked the question, just because, like, you look at, maybe it's just like the lack of like back end talent at QB in the NFL right now, just because, like, I feel like once you get past like the, a lot of, obviously there's a few guys that are hurt, so I'll leave them kind of off the list right now just because they're injured. But like, you know, that top 15 you're pretty comfortable with, but like 15 to like 32, and then obviously the backups after that, like, you're kind of like, Case is like right in that, like, right now at least, is in that kind of like middle of the road pack of like, I'm comfortable with a guy like Case Keenum over a
obviously like a Drew Stanton, you know, and some of those like other,
you know, the line Moore's, always says, do you think Case Keenum is better than Andy Dalton?
I said, no, I don't.
So if you don't think Case Keenum is better than Andy Dalton, I would probably think that you wouldn't want Case Keenum as your long-term but quarterback.
Is Case better than guys like Jimmy Garoppolo, Brock Osweiler, Trevor
Brock Simeon? Osweiler, absolutely. Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't know.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, though. Like, but people are – Jimmy Garoppolo is, like, 26 now. So, like, it – you know what I'm saying? Like, Case is putting sample size out there. Like, he's going to get another opportunity to be a starter. That's what – that's why I mean, like, we keep calling him a high-end backup, but he's going to get another opportunity to be a starter, in my opinion, after this season, just because of the way he's played.
Well, his agent, Yanko, will see to it, and he's going to get that $13 million. Well, honestly, he's going to get that $13 million per, so Yanko can come on here and tell us all he told us so.
If I'm Case, I don't see any reason why – like, I know that we want to re-sign Case Keenum and how that should be such a priority. I don't see any reason why Case would want to do that. If he wants to – like, Case wants to play. He wants to start. And you know he's going to have an opportunity. There's enough QB hungry teams that are willing to pay. Hey, honestly,
we're a QB hungry team. Like, that's the funny part, though. Is
but
like,
I'm saying
we keep making this argument that he's going to be our quarterback like next year or whatever. We don't know who our quarterback is next year.
Yeah, but I'm saying, are you willing to pay Case $12-13 million? I mean, and that, the point I was going to make was that is $12-13 million for a quarterback is still fairly cheap. Tom Brady's only getting paid what 14?
His wife's a billionaire.
15?
Tom Brady's an outlier.
But though. I'm just saying, like, when you look at quarterbacks who are getting, you obviously have the low ends who are making, you know, the $3-4 million. You have the high ends who are making up to 25, and then there's kind of this middle road where guys are, you know, can make anywhere from, you know, 15 to 20.
Are you so Miles? To put the question back on you then. What are you comfortable?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm going to assume, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, I'm assuming that you answered no on the poll today. But, I mean, if you were to have answered yes, Case Keenum is the quarterback of the future, what are you comfortable paying him? Like, if you want to lock him in right now, given the uncertainty, what would you pay him?
That's where my murkiness comes, because it's like, if Case Keenum was the starting quarterback of our team next year, to me that doesn't make him the QB of the future. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a scenario where I could see Case Keenum being the starting quarterback heading into 2018. Like, the way he's playing right now, like, obviously we have to play the whole season out. That's still a long ways to go.
Stop filibustering and answer the question, how much you pay in Case Keenum?
Like, $10 million would be, like, the high end for me.
Okay, so.
Okay, can I address something real quick? Sorry. Well, so basically how it is right now is we have, you know, one of those top five defenses right now. So usually how that works is you can plug in like a young quarterback into that top defense and still operate somewhat efficiently. That's kind of how the NFL has gone. Obviously, once those defensive players get older, it's a lot harder to sometimes fill those positions or pay everyone. So guys leave for free agency. And that's when you hope to get to the point where your quarterback is good enough to play. I see this becoming a thing where you have to have that question figured out, because the hope is that quarterback will be good enough to start letting go of some of these pieces that, you know, you can, I guess, per se, make up some of that productivity because your quarterback is playing at a much higher level. I think having Adam Thielen and Diggs for, you know, next 4 or 5 years is going to be good for any quarterback who's playing with us, but you probably need to lock him up in the next few years, hopefully for relatively cheap. Case being almost 30 years old, 30 years old for next year, might not be that guy. So I think it's just as important to find a guy. If you're going to draft one, draft him now. If it's going to be Teddy, you know, lock him up. If it's going to be another quarterback you bring in, you know, make, you know, hopefully it's something that's reasonable so that you can keep some of those pieces.
All right. Well, I feel like we've beat this subject to absolute death. So we're going to go ahead and lock it down. I think we're all in agreement that if we could get Case back at maybe like most expensive backup in the league, lower end of starting quarterback money, that I think most all of us would be down for doing that right now. I think pretty much everyone is in agreement that, you know, Case starts versus the Rams, good. Teddy starts versus the Rams. We don't know. Good story. We can see what's happening. If it doesn't go well, Case Keenum can come back in. and hop right back into the groove that he's been in. It's not like he won't have been practicing with the receivers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think really, I guess the last thing, maybe you have to start another website again, but no one on this podcast hates Case Keenum. It's not that serious. It's just football. It's just football. So, you know, if JR, when he's doing his tape analysis, points out where Case threw off his back foot into triple coverage, it's not because he hates Case. It's because it's what happened. And it's really not that serious. No one needs to get in their feelings really about any of these takes because it's just a bunch of people talking about football. It's what fans do. But there was a game. There was a game. We should probably talk a little bit about the game. So, JR, I know I saw you start your kind of weekly kind of game breakdown on there. So, Washington, Minnesota, played a game I think most of us thought was going to be a low-scoring game going in, and a shootout broke out. So, JR, what were your thoughts in the game? What were your big takeaways?
Yeah, this game was the exact opposite of what everyone expected. No one would have guessed that both teams would combine for 68 points, you know, the final score being 38-30, and the Vikings coming out on top. So I thought the defense took a slight step back. They just weren't able to make a lot of plays that we were accustomed to them making. The Redskins came out and went right down the field on them and scored 7 points to the receiver. I think his name was Maurice Harris, I believe his name was, or something like that, that just got activated off the practice squad. But, you know, the Vikings, it was an up-and-down game for them defensively. They did make some plays in certain spots. It was good to see some young players grow up in some certain spots, especially Mackenzie Alexander coming up with his first interception of his career. So that was really good to see. The pass rush was really non-existent. That's kind of what we expected without Everson Griffin. Danielle Hunter did end up with a sack, but he pretty much was invisible up until that point as far as a pass rush standpoint. But I thought the secondary was okay. Kirk Cousins did pick him apart in certain spots, but a player that did really stand out but didn't really fill up the stat sheet was Anthony Barr. He did a really good job in the underneath coverage. You know, Chris Thompson did get loose a couple times, particularly on that wheel route against Eric Kendricks. But otherwise, I thought Anthony Barr had a really good game, even though he didn't really stuff the stat sheet like we're accustomed to seeing him do. But he was a player that did stand out in certain spots. Harrison Smith was another guy that stood out, just flying around all over the field like we're accustomed to see him doing. Offensively, I mean, it was the Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs show. They just do what they do every week. When Diggs is healthy, we know he's a top 10 to 15 receiver in the league, and Adam Thielen is slowly creeping into that top 10 conversation, in my opinion. I mean, he's here, guys. He's been outstanding for the Vikings this year, and the good thing about Thielen is that he's not a guy that doesn't get a lot of notoriety, but he just shows up and plays football every week, and he's turned into a superstar, in my opinion. And just the type of catches that he's able to make in traffic, and it just seems like he's always open. That's what's really good about Adam Thielen. And I got to give a shout-out to the interior offensive line of the Minnesota Vikings. They did an outstanding job. Nick Easton, Pat Elflein, and Joe Berger dominated up front. And we all said the Redskins were really soft up the middle. They had some injuries. You know, Jonathan Allen was a guy, their first-round draft pick, that's out. They had season-ending surgery. So they were lacking depth up the middle. And what we wanted to see was them be able to get Latavius Murray going up the middle. And we saw that early and often from the first drive to the end of the game, just rushing Latavius Murray up the middle. So those were some things that stood out to me. Overall, I probably would give the offensive performance a B+. If they were able to repeat what they did in the first half, I would give them an A easily, and the defense would probably get a C-.
Okay. All right. Miles, you know, JR alluded to it a little bit there, but our receivers took the Washington cornerbacks to the woodshed in this game. What did you see while you were watching? And, what are your thoughts on, the local hero, Adam Thielen?
Yeah, I mean, JR made some really great points. At this point, I think Adam Thielen is a top 10 wide receiver. You know, obviously, again, you know, we're into week 10, and he's, the second leading receiver in the league. The only thing that he doesn't have is, you know, the touchdowns, but, like, everything else he's doing is phenomenal right now. I mean, there's not a lot of receivers that you'd want on your team over Adam Thielen right now. And I mean, that's just the flat out truth. That guy's playing, he's balling. And I hope it continues, because we really need him down the stretch, because him being able to hold down the fort, you know, with guys like Diggs who get nicked up every once in a while and, you know, sit a game or two, a guy like Adam Thielen is so important. But when you get those two together, they're probably the best receiving duo in the league, because, like, as you can see in our offense, the offense revolves around those two, and then everybody else just plays their complementary roles. Like, we'll run the ball, obviously, but, like, the passing game just circles around those two. And then if anybody else contributes, it's just because they, you know, they happen to get an opportunity. But, like, it's those two, and then it's the rest of the offense, because and I know, Jason, this is something you've alluded to for a long time, that the passing game kind of is leading the charge in the new age NFL and the success rate and everything like that. So it's working for this team, and with the, you know, between those two. So I love what those two are doing. I thought the offense, you know, in the first half, especially I'd give them an A+. The second half, you know, probably go closer to a B-, just because of, you know, the turnovers. And I think they got a little complacent at times, but I really liked what they did overall. I thought Latavius Murray, he's finally he didn't have like a huge breakout game or anything, but he's the kind of guy that, you know, which is a little unfortunate. He doesn't get you the tough yards you kind of need sometimes, because he runs so upright. But I think he's starting to look healthier. You can tell that ankle's starting to look a little healthier and a little more explosion out of him. So that's nice to see, because, you know, him and Jet are the, you know, two guys we're going to need down the road. Defensively, it's the first time this whole season I think we've all kind of been like, just because, like, I think if Jamison Crowder doesn't have the six drops he had yesterday, we could be, you know, talking a whole different game, because he dropped a lot of passes yesterday, and he dropped a for sure touchdown and some key passes on third down and second and longs and stuff like that. So we dodged a couple bullets there, because I think, you know, he was open on a lot of plays against us. And I know we talked last week about him being one of the guys we were worried about most, and it showed. He just didn't make the plays. But I thought Kirk Cousins played a pretty good game overall against this defense, and especially, you know, with his offensive line rotating in and out the way they were. I mean, guys, the Spencer Long and Brandon Scherff were like coming in and off, you know, rotating series and stuff like that. And so that's never fun for a quarterback, but I thought Kirk handled it well, and his lack of like receiving weapons right now is pretty limited too. And so I thought he played a really good game on their end, but I don't want to toot their horn too much, because we won, so forget that. But overall, I just thought we played a really good game. It got dicey toward the end there, but the Vikings came, like, this is what winning teams do. This is what teams that, you know, Vikings past might not have done. Like, last season we let teams back into games. We didn't let Washington back into the game. I know it ended up being an 8-score, you know, when we ended up winning by 8, but we definitely did not let them back in the game. We kept making the plays when we needed to in that fourth quarter. So I thought it was a really good game. It was really good to see them, you know, us, even when Washington did start to creep back, not let them, you know, tie the game up. So I was really impressed with that.
Case Keenum was just out there on his Matthew Stafford. You know, you got to throw a couple picks to make the game look a little interesting.
Right.
And then you come through with that clutch play in the fourth quarter, and everyone's like, oh my God, you're so clutch. So, I mean, he learned from the highest paid quarterback in the division, so we can go get that $13 million that Saxy Prince is trying to get him there on a per year basis. Makes sense.
I kind of like the Washington team, because we've played them, I think, is it like 7 straight years or something like that? Like 5 of the last 7 years?
Yeah, it feels like it,
They honestly remind me a little bit of like the Detroit Lions and like Matthew Stafford, Kirk Cousins and Matt Stafford. Like, I feel like we'll have a lead and they still find ways to come back. And it was bothering the hell out of me yesterday. So I'm just glad we pulled out that win.
Yeah, we'll take it. And Saxy Prince, bring us home. What were your key takeaways as you watched that game live and then you rewatched it earlier today?
Yeah, I rewatched it this morning, and something that I have to comment on is the genius that is Pat Shurmur. I think Rashad Hill played a really good game, but I definitely felt like schematically there were some things that Shurmur did to account for the fact that, you know, Rashad Hill isn't Mike Remmers. I think there was a few rollout plays where, you know, Shurmur definitely pulled Keno out to the left side, you know, have him roll out to the left and, you know, make a play that way rather than rolling out to the right. So you just have to credit Pat Shurmur. There are definitely some things that I see as far as, you know, you really wish you still had a guy like Dalvin Cook on this offense, because I commented to you guys before, and the way that some of our run blocking is happening, you can just tell that it was just made to bring out the strengths that is Dalvin Cook. You know, some of the really quick lateral movements and the quick twitch stuff. And you could tell. Something that I've noticed, though, that I would like to see a little bit more, and I think maybe just getting Jerick McKinnon more involved, is definitely more passes to the running backs, just getting them a little bit more involved with, you know, pass game, whether it be, you know, whether it be like screens or, you know, some swing passes, something to get them a little bit more on the edges, or even just for, you know, just from some short yardage type stuff. I definitely have to, you know, you have to give credit to both Adam Thielen and Case Keenum. They look like they were just in sync. They were just connected. I know that there was a few plays that I was impressed as far as Case Keenum. Within the pocket, he was able to navigate some of the pressure, step up, you know, climb pockets, hashtag brand. And he was doing some really good things as far as trying to find his receivers a little bit further down the field. Defensive side of the ball, I know that we started off really rough. You know, it's really uncharacteristic to give 30 points on a Mike Zimmer defense, but that's something I've noticed for the last couple of years. This is our fourth year. Zimmer's defense usually gives away one nasty game for whatever reason. Last year was the Indy game. The year before that, it was the Seattle game. The year before that, it was the – and I'm drawing a blank right now. Anyways, but it happens. But something that I did notice where you see the maturation of this team is, you know, once one unit has kind of given away the game, that's usually the end of the game. But what you saw is, as, you know, maybe Case Keenum started to make more mental mistakes and stuff, you really saw the unit start to step up in ways that they needed to. I think that it kind of alludes to what Miles was saying as far as, even though they kind of crept up to us, you know, we still won by at least a score. So having this defense play at a high level is going to be important in the postseason. You know, having guys like Mackenzie Alexander, who you can see is clearly maturing and getting that swag and that confidence into, you know, making more plays and, you know, just kind of being a ball hawk around the ball, Harrison Smith. I'm pretty sure Linval is going to kill somebody by the end of the season. I think it's going to happen. And also I can't forget to mention this guy, Marcus Sherrills. I think having him on kickoff duty has definitely helped this offense, because we're not, you know, it's fine to obviously want to take it out, you know, 9 yards deep. But the problem is, you know, if you're not even getting back to the 25, you know, you're really making your offense having to work a little bit harder. So I think it was good for Mike Prefer to make that switch and keep Marcus Sherrills, like, you know, I guess more included, because, you know, he is so reliable. So those are some of the things that I saw.
And, you know, of course, you know, we had to keep on Minnesota brand. Miles got the Thielen in. So, of course, you got to bring us back with the Sherrills. It all makes sense. Something that everyone's kind of brought up here was the defense didn't look good starting out the game. Really turned into a shootout that really none of us were expecting going in. And before the game at Washington, I was kind of thinking that it'd be an advantage for Mike Zimmer that he was going against Jay Gruden. They coached together in Cincinnati. He'd have, you know, a great knowledge of the scheme. But it seemed when I watched, you know, live, and then when I watched it again today, it seemed that there were a few occasions where, you know, Washington was able to outflank us, where we'd, you know, send a pressure up the middle, and Washington was ready for it and kind of had a counter ready to go. And so that has me a little bit more nervous than I thought I was going to be going into this Rams matchup, because obviously McVay was the offensive coordinator in Washington. They're probably going to be looking at a lot of the things that, you know, Washington did successfully against us in this game and try to replicate those things as we move into the game against the Rams. So I guess, you know, JR, kick it to you first. I guess, what were your thoughts on kind of what Washington was exploiting, or what was Washington doing to exploit the Vikings defense in this game? And what are the things that you would like to see us do to tighten those things up? Or is it just as easy as Everson Griffin comes back and everything's good?
No, I wouldn't say it's as easy as Everson Griffin coming back and everything is all right. Everson's a great player, but it was more outside issues going on than just not having a pass rush. I thought Jay Gruden did a really good job of manipulating ways of getting the running back out of the backfield, like I alluded to earlier, getting, you know, Chris Thompson out in space against Anthony Barr and Eric Kendricks. They were very successful at doing that and just hitting some throws over the middle. And that's kind of a counteract to double-A gap pressure, because you are leaving the void over the middle when you do blitz both of the A-gap. So, and that's something that we saw with Jay Gruden and what he was doing as far as, you know, changing the launch point, moving the pocket with Kirk Cousins. He was doing that often. And I think it was actually the first play of the game when they rolled out and they kind of confused Trey Waynes. It looked like it was supposed to be man coverage on the rollout pass, and he just didn't go with the receiver. I think it was Grant that came across. So just a lot of counter, you know, reactions to Mike Zimmer's double-A gap pressure as far as, you know, getting guys over the middle and getting the running backs out in space. That was one of the biggest adjustments that he did make.
And so I know that you started looking at the Rams a little bit there, I guess. What are your kind of preliminary thoughts? I know we'll circle back later in the week, but what are your preliminary thoughts on how, you know, we counteract some of, you know, that similar kind of game plan that you'll see with the Rams, where they kind of are using Todd Gurley and Tavon Austin to get them in space versus either our linebackers or safeties or corners?
Very creative offense, and that's something that you see even against the Texans. They did struggle in the first half against them, but they were able to explode in the third quarter. I think the key to this game is just they have to defend the guys in the slot, and they have to tackle in open space extremely well, because what McVay relies heavily upon is creativity in the screen game, getting Ty Gurley out in space, Woods out in space, and Cooper Kupp out in space as well. He'll take occasional shots down the field with Woods and Sammy Watkins as well, but he relies heavily upon creative ways to get his playmakers in space in the screen game, and that's what you saw against the Texans. You know, he's constantly trying to get the ball on the edge as far as running outside zone, and basically that's to set you up for the screen game. So he ran a tunnel screen to Sammy Watkins where they faked outside zone to one side and they threw the tunnel all the way backside, and I think Sammy Watkins ended up scoring on that play. So McVay does a really good job of getting his playmakers in space, and screens is a big part of that. And I think Ty Gurley has over like 400 yards receiving this year, so he's incorporating the running back a lot in the passing game as well. So Anthony Barr and Eric Kendricks really have to come to play this game, and just they have to be one step ahead of the screen game and diagnose what's going on.
I guess, Miles, Yinka, was there anything else that you guys saw that that really stood out to you in terms of, you know, things that were exploited by the Washington offense that you would really like to see us tighten up before we go play against the Rams? We'll start with Miles.
I'd say the only thing was, you know, like I said before, talking about Jamison Crowder, I think, you know, guys in the slot, guys being able to exploit, you know, guys like Mackenzie Alexander, who, you know, he had that nice interception, but I thought there were some opportunities that Washington missed on that Mackenzie got real lucky on. So if they find ways to exploit some of that, I think that could be some trouble.
How about you, Prince?
I think a lot of people had said, like, oh, well, the Vikings really, really missed Everson Griffin. I think there's an aspect of that that's true, but I don't think the reason why this defense kind of fell apart at times was because of the loss of Everson Griffin. I think there was some kind of, you know, some chess match between Gruden and Zim where, you know, Gruden just had a, you know, proper play for the blitz that were being called. There was one play specifically, I think it was on, I think it would have been on the Vernon Davis pass or maybe a Crowder or whatever, something like over the middle where it was kind of a blown coverage. And I think part of it was Anthony Barr had the responsibility to drop into, you know, a deeper zone, and he did drop into it, which obviously gave him a nice cushion and stuff. So I think this is going to be an issue of really, really understanding what your role is on any given play, and not just your role, but also understanding the role of other people. I think that's what we're seeing. Some of those miscues not seen as many blown coverages, but every so often they pop up. Trey Waynes has been playing really well, so you know, I can't necessarily say it's one guy in particular. I think I've seen, especially in this last game, I think I saw every single player that wasn't probably named Linval Joseph mess up. So I think it just comes with everyone needs to just kind of you know, just communicate a little bit better, and I think that's what you saw Kirk Cousins and Gruden being able to exploit.
Yeah, that's fair. And I guess really this next really important question for you and Miles here is we did a preview show and none of you mentioned DJ Swearingen. What's that all about? And where did he come from to completely take over this defensive game?
Yeah, I don't know. He was a beast. Arizona.
Nope. See,
he's been around a little bit, but I think
AOL came for you on that one, Miles. And I think you were telling us all the places that DJ Swearingen played before coming to Washington to snatch the soul out of Case Keenum in the second half. But we couldn't hear any of that because, you know. So, Prince, what was your take on DJ Swearingen?
No, I can be honest. I completely forgot about DJ Swearingen, but I guess I also thought that maybe, you know, their safeties would be more responsible for doubling up on both Diggs and Thielen and whatnot. So I didn't think he was going to be as big a factor, but
no, they
saw him get.
They started a man. Then they started to switch up the coverages and get into zone. They disguised a few things with DJ Swearingen.
I saw that. I'm just saying that that's why I didn't remember or even account for him.
Oh, yeah.
I thought they were going to not. I thought they were going to double up a little bit more than they did. But they trusted Swearingen to just be on Rudolph, which I'm not even going to talk about Rudolph because I don't need to get blocked.
But they couldn't handle David Morgan in the red zone.
Yeah, apparently.
No, Jason.
Good play design, by
Jason,
the way.
What I was saying before, Swearingen came from Arizona, and then from Tampa. I think he was in Arizona. He was in Arizona, then I think he was in Tampa before that. And then I think he's finally found his home in Washington. I know they like him a lot up there.
Let me pull up his Wikipedia page here and see where he's played. Yeah, you're right. He started in Houston, went to Tampa, went to Arizona.
That was Houston he started. That's it. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Now
he was like a second-round pick. He was like a second-round pick.
Is he South Carolina?
Yes. Yeah, Swearingen was always good. He just had attitude problems.
Okay. All right. All right. And then Miles alluded to it earlier. I think this is really the last point we're going to touch on the Washington game here. And I'll start with JR because it's a QB question. Is Kirk Cousins good? Because he seemed pretty good.
Yes, he's always been good.
Absolutely. Kirk Cousins is a top 12 to 15 quarterback in the NFL. I've always believed that. Now he's a guy that has to be surrounded by a lot of weapons if you want to see his true potential. But I think he's a highly accurate quarterback that you can win with in the NFL, and I think he's going to be paid very handsomely this offseason. But whoever that team is that pays him, they just have to understand that he has to have an adequate amount of weapons around him or you're not going to see the true potential of Kirk Cousins.
Okay. All right. That's fair. That's fair. Miles, I think we know where you stand. Kurt is good. Kirk is good.
Yeah, Kirk's good.
Prince, what are your thoughts? Is Kirk Cousins good?
Yes, I think Kirk Cousins is good. You know, JR hit the nail on the head is, you know, if you have that 12 to 15 ranked quarterback type thing, yeah, just get him run a good offensive line, get him some weapons. Maybe get him a defense that, you know, probably would produce at a much higher level so he doesn't have the pressure to. And you can watch him thrive. So,
okay, so follow-up question then, and we'll go the reverse order, starting with Prince. So if Kirk Cousins is good, we're a QB needy team, would you want Kirk Cousins at 20,
nope,
whatever, $25 to $30 million, whatever it's going to cost to get him, Keenum? We'll say Keenum Teddy Bridgewater at, you know, the $10 to $15 million range. I guess, where would you go? We'll go rapid reaction, so we don't need you to justify. Kirk at the top end, Keenum at, you know, 10, or Teddy in that 10 to 15 range. Which way are you going?
Well, I'm going Case and Keenum at Case and Teddy at that 10 to 15.
You get to pick one or the other. One or the other.
Oh, whatever. I'll pay Teddy Bridgewater 11, 12 million.
Okay. Miles, how about you?
I'll go Teddy Bridgewater 8 to 10 million until we see him play.
All right. And JR, bring us home. How about yourself, man?
Lamar Jackson. No, I'm playing. Teddy Bridgewater.
Okay. Now, Lamar Jackson, just burn Vikings Twitter down right now. I don't think we can handle all that, but all right. I think we've made it through everything that we wanted to cover today. I guess before we get up out of here, JR, Miles, Prince, anything that we should be on the lookout from you guys?
I'm in the Big Boy podcast coming Thursday.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. And I promised last week, I am finishing up an article that will be out later this week.
We'll just blame the internet for any articles that that you know. Just blame them. Miles has actually been trying to post the article for the last week and a half, and it just hasn't made it up on the site yet.
It's but still soon. Loading.
but soon. How about you, Sexy Prince?
Yeah, I think I might do. I know that we've already jumped into after the bye, but I think I'm going to keep going with my midseason awards and just go through position groups and stuff. People I think have done really well, so. See a lot of that.
All right. And I think that after this next game, well, the game that's playing right now, the Monday night game, I'm going to go in and update the kind of QB rankings that I did in the offseason, where I look across, various advanced metrics and try to come up with my current kind of where everyone is. And I imagine that'll start a bit of a conversation. And I expect Case Keenum to be in the top 10 when it all shakes out. So, yeah. That's the next thing I think I want to work on, just be because I'm curious to see where Case shakes out when you bring the PFF grade and all the other advanced metrics in. So, yeah, that's something I'm going to work on this week. And Prince has his hand up. What's going on, my man?
I hate to do this because I know that we close the door and stuff, but I think it's important to know. So, obviously, we play the game against the Rams on Sunday. 3 days later or 4 days later, we play the Lions on Thanksgiving. If whoever's going to start on Sunday, do you think that it has kind of a somewhat of an impact with the short week, who plays on or who starts on Thursday?
That's a good point. I think if Teddy does not start on Sunday, he won't start on Thursday.
I think that
unless there's an injury, obviously.
Yeah, I'm crushing my hopes.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's where the Vikings are right now as well too. If you are going to get Teddy in, this is probably, against Aaron Donald, it sucks. But I think if you're not getting him in this week, it's probably going to be several weeks before you see him actually get to make the start.
Yeah, that's a fair take. I think whoever starts this coming Sunday starts on Thanksgiving, and I think that makes a lot of sense. And if you don't make a change until after the Thanksgiving game, it does give you more time to install with that quarterback. So that's another way they can go. But yeah, I guess we will find out. When are they making the announcement? Is it Wednesday?
Yep.
Yeah. So I guess we'll have some.
That's what they said.
Have some ammo for the next podcast when we get back together. So yeah, that's it. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. My name is Jason Brown. Find me on Twitter with Brown Jason. Once again, I am here with the full crew. JR, Miles, and the Sexy Prince. Y'all have a good night.